No one heard me. And this person is who we call, you guys heard, seen probably on the system or on our page there, that we call this person the checked out partner. Basically, that means they're done. They've checked out of the marriage. They don't believe that anything that the partner will ever hear them or that anything will ever change. And honestly, folks, if their partner doesn't learn to listen, they're not wrong. Until you hear what your partner needs, you can't change. You can't be what you need them, what they need you to be. You can't alter your behavior. And by the way, of course, I believe change is possible. It's what I do for a living. It's why our system is so effective. People can change. People can grow, no matter whether they've been married for 2 years or 35 years. Doesn't matter. But mostly people don't listen to what the other person needs. And so what happens is, as the marriage is falling apart, I've got one person on the couch saying, I don't understand why she or he is leaving me. And the other person is saying, I have been telling you for 10, 20, 30 years that I need blank. And you haven't listened to me. And again, that's why listening is so vital. So, and also, by the way, maybe now, and what usually happens at the end after that transition is now it's the checked out spouse that won't listen anymore because they're done trying. They don't want to hear the excuses. They don't want to hear what you have to say. They don't want to hear about your feelings. They don't want to hear any of that. They're done. And in most cases, unfortunately, what the other person does, the person who's being left, is they just talk louder. They talk more. They just talk and talk and talk and talk, and it doesn't do any good. Because they need to start listening, not keep talking, not keep telling the other person what they should feel and what they're doing is wrong and how they're affecting the family. They just keep talking. And honestly, they need to do the exercise that I'm talking about. They need to start listening and ask more questions. And if you guys find yourself that you're in a relationship or one of you is checked out, the answer, again, is not to tell them how you feel. The answer is to start asking questions and to find out how they feel. It's only in that time that you guys are going to be able to possibly meet their needs or even give them the understanding and the kind of the hope that they need. So, did you?
Well, I know you and I have talked about that one couple that you've worked with over several months, and they have a lot of trouble listening to each other. They're just like, they're the ones who are like, well, wait a second, but I feel this way. Well, wait a second, I feel this way. Can you tell about that,
yeah,
that couple?
Yeah, you know, I mean, maybe you guys, I don't know if you know from the videos, but I tend to be a very straight-up therapist. I don't like to waste people's time. I just kind of just call it how I see it, and I tell people kind of what I'm going on. So this one particular couple, literally, the one person could be crying in devastation on the couch, and the other person was, oh, yeah, but I did. This is how I. And then another time, one person could be just devastated by something that they've done or said to each other, and that person can just sob and cry and say, this is what's going on for me. The second they stop crying, the other person goes, yeah, but I just. I had to tell this couple that there are three different types of relationships. There's a relationship where person A thinks it's all about person B, and those kind of relationships work out okay. There's relationships where person B thinks it's all about person A, and those kind of relationships work out okay. Oh, actually, there's four. And then there's this couple's kind of relationship, and that's when both people A and B think it's all about them. And those relationships are really, really hard, and they're really, really hard to work with and really, really hard to stay. And I told this couple, you guys are that relationship. You're the relationship where you think it's all about you. And it doesn't matter if the person is standing there emotionally bleeding to death. You just want to talk about the fact that they're bleeding on your shoes. Like, it's never about the other person. And yes, I told this couple that. And then, of course, what I told them is the ideal couple is the couple who thinks it's about each other. Person A thinks it's about person B. Person B thinks it's about person A. Those are the best, and those are the relationships that you usually don't come to see me, honestly, because they don't need to. But I told this couple that, and they really did.
How did they take it? I mean,
well, it's funny because I think on that particular day, it was a very bonding moment for them because they were both mad at me. Yeah, so they connected on the fact that they couldn't believe I would say something like that. However, and left the office rather mad at me. However, it changed after that. It really changed after that because they knew what I was thinking. They knew, I'd called them out in essence. I'd said, like, you know, you guys, you know they're this family, right? You know you're that couple that thinks it's all about them. So now when someone starts talking about their own pain, they had to learn to listen. They had to, because I'd called them out and I'd said, you don't listen, you don't hear, you only care about you. They didn't want to hear it, but it dramatically changed their relationship and their marriage. They're still together now. As far as I know, I believe they had another baby and everything worked out well. So, that kind of intervention.
That's awesome.
again, it was all about the listening. And sometimes you have to point out that somebody's just really not. But it does make a big difference. So I encourage you guys to try the exercise. I encourage you guys to, I say this again because I said I was a very upfront therapist, stop talking and shut up and listen.
Well, my mother-in-law, Sandra, has this great line. She says, well, when I was a kid, my father told me that you have two ears and one mouth for a reason. She'd listen twice as much as you speak.
I love it.
I know.
I think that's great. That's a good motto to have as well. I would argue that that's a great motto to have in a marriage. So
awesome.
There you go. That's what I have to say about this.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that, Dana. We're going to get into now some of the logistics for it. Now time for you guys to ask your questions. And just to remind you guys, for anyone that is hearing this for the first time, we're going to spend about 3 to 5 minutes per question, and we're going to just limit it to that time so we can serve as many of you guys on the call as possible. And we know some of these questions are kind of tough, and they're hard to fully cover in 3 to 5 minutes, but please understand that we're doing that to make the best use of the time and serve as many of you guys as we can. And those of you guys who have been on past calls have been great about just diving in when it's your turn and just getting straight to your question. So keep that up. If you feel like you want to share some more information, there is our community that we have on the membership website. So you can ask your questions in the forum, share more background information and those types of things. So that's another resource for you to get some help. So what you're going to do is, if you want to speak to Dr. Dana, you can raise your hand. To get in line to ask your question by pressing *2 on your phone. So if you want to do that now, you're welcome to. Just press *2, and then I'll be going through, and I'll identify you by the last 4 digits of your phone number. So, for instance, I would say, 4093, it's your turn, that type of thing. So that's how you'll know that you're unmuted. And when you're unmuted, just say your first name and ask your question. So let's open it up to our first caller. I see we've got somebody here, so let me unmute you. It's caller 9401. Oh.
Hello. Hello.
Okay. Hey, I muted myself. That was brilliant. I told you we were going to have a few technical glitches. I am so sorry. I'm talking. Can you hear me? I apologize about that. So caller 9401, you are now unmuted, not the only unmuted one on the call now. Please state your name and your question.
Hi, Dana. This is John. Can you hear me now?
I can, John. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much for your time today. I'm going to dive right in. My new spouse has checked out, and she's almost done packing and moving out after a short marriage of a year and a half. She's leaving because she feels that I misled her about my finances. I've been struggling to get back on my feet after the death of a spouse whom I was married to for 20-plus years. I fought for 6.5 years to keep her alive while she battled Lou Gehrig's disease. I don't know if you're familiar with ALS, but it is a wicked, cruel disease. I was a millionaire before it all started, but I lost it all during that process. Tried to save my father's business prior to that, lost him as well to leukemia, skin cancer, and lung cancer. So it's been a tough time for me. But as I say, I wasn't a millionaire. I was happily married for 20-plus years. I know what a strong marriage is and what I want to have with my new wife. And she's seemingly saying that I've been saying money things would get better for over a year and a half. Her time frame on this seems to be incredibly short. Those who know me well say I'll be back on my feet in no time, including a prospective employer who's ready to hire me. I've been trying to start a new company, which hasn't been going particularly well, but, as I say, I've been very, very successful for a long time and confident that I will, but she seems to be running for the hills, thinking that there's not a snowball's chance in hell that any of that's going to happen, and she also just got a new job. She does have a place where she can live, a condo that she rented, and she's in the process of removing tenants from that place so that she can move back in there. So in the how to get your spouse to check back in, I'm having a hard time because the options that pertain to her, the financial hurt she's not going to feel, my two kids are going to feel hurt, but she has two more grown children that aren't even really involved in this. And it's a crime. It's a crime because we had a beautiful relationship and a lot to look forward to.
Okay. Well, you know, John, first let me say I'm you know, so sorry about what you've been through over the last several years. You know, that's amazing. And I know that having an illness like that and a long-term illness can very much devastate somebody's finances, and I'm sure you did your very, very best. And I'm proud of you that you really stuck by and did what it took. So I think that's great. Secondly, you know, again, I don't know if you know, but the three, you know, most deadly times for a marriage are at about year two, and year seven, and then about 25 years after year 25. But, you know, she's right on time, basically. And unfortunately, why that is because sort of the glow wears off and people look around and they decide if this is something that they want. I'm a little, again, I mean no disrespect to your wife, I'm a little bit suspicious honestly somewhat disapproving about her motives here, that money is why she would walk away from the marriage. In the interest of whether, you know, we've been talking about listening today, I'm wondering, you know, I'm assuming you've been listening to her about what she needs, listening to her about what's important, listening to her about what she plans on and wants from a marriage, I'm hoping.
Yes.
And okay, that's great. So, you know, what has she said what it would take for her to stay? What she would want?
We had a couple of short marriage counseling sessions, but they didn't go particularly well. She wanted to use the sessions to sort of say, you know, I'm all done, and you know, really wasn't quite sure why she was there. Go ahead, Dana.
Yeah, so, you know, she's pretty much made a decision at this point. I would kind of want to know, you know, A, what the commitment meant to her in the first place, B, what it would take for her to stay, what that would mean, and, you know, what she would need to, you know, happen. Go ahead.
What I was going to say was that in the session, the counselor said, you know, now if John won the lottery tomorrow, would you stay? And she said no. And my comment to that would be, I'd like to see the look on her face when I have the winning ticket. But I do believe that if, you know, suddenly all the things that I said that I'm able to do, you know, suddenly came to fruition and I returned to my top form as a highly paid, you know, broadcast executive in America and, you know, got us on more stable footing and extinguished some of the past debt, which is not chasing us very hard. But we have a large home that's underwater, and that's you know, a part of the stress. But I had agreed to get rid of it. And,
let me cut you off real quick because I want to ask you one more question. If she said no, that she wouldn't stay with you if she won the lottery, then that means she's got other objections to the marriage. And what are those? I mean, I would want to know what those are. If she said no, then what she's saying is, I wouldn't stay because I'm unhappy with blah, 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 blah.
She's saying she doesn't want to be married, and I insert the word to me, and she says no. She says, I don't think I can deal with this marriage thing. I thought I could. She doesn't think that she can deal with being a stepmother to my two beautiful children who are, you know, one is a straight-A honor student doing gobs of community service work. The other one is a 13-year-old who's a pretty typical boy, but he's a fabulous athlete, and, you know, they're pretty exceptional children. But she's having a hard time being a stepmother. It says that she doesn't have permission to discipline them. And, you know, those are some of the issues.
She doesn't have permission at this point. But there's lots of good books, because they won't listen to her. There's lots of really good books, and there's lots of really good programs that teach somebody how to co-parent and how to be a blended family. It sounds like she's just not putting – all of the things that you're telling me can be fixed. All the things that you're telling me, she can learn how to do that. She can, you know, learn how to come into an already existing family. And there's all sorts of ways to do that. It's just a matter of her being willing to do the work. But I've got to say, and Ken, you know, and before I have to wrap it up and move to the next call, you know that I'm very pro-marriage. You know that I very much work to keep couples together. That being said, I don't necessarily know that you want somebody in your children's lives who does not want to be there. Because in the end, that's going to hurt them more than help them. So if she is resentful, he is unhappy, and she does not want to co-parent them, and she's not willing to learn how, I'm not entirely sure it's going to be a bad idea for her to leave. And I'm sorry that I want to protect your marriage and I want to help, but I don't want to put your kids in a position where you know, they've got a step monster for the rest of their lives. That's not going to help them.
Yeah.
So she wants to get on board with that for you to stay, as far as I'm concerned. Wow.
I appreciate your input, Dana. And if I were to try to get her to check back in to work on these things, I mean, how do you think I'd begin to do it? I mean, she just continues to pack and continues to sort of work independently from me, including, you know, independent banking and all kinds of things.
I would just kind of tell her that, you know, that you love her, that you want this to work, that you want, you know, that you want to work on the relationship and listen to what she would need for that to happen. Tell her that you've got some, you know that there are solutions out there to all of her objections. But then also, maybe also tell her what you need and what you would want as well to kind of give you a stronger position, what you would require to work on this as well. Again, that she'd have to get on board because your kids have to be the number one priority. So, you know, I mean, just letting her know about that and letting her know, again, that there's help out there, that all of the situations that you're talking about are fixable. Everything you're talking about is learnable. There's nothing in there that makes me think, oh, boy. And just kind of, you know, again, sort of letting her know that you're willing to work on it. Thanks for calling, John. I appreciate it. It worked out.
You bet.
Thanks.
All right. Thanks, John. We're going to go to our next caller, the caller ending in 7761, you are now unmuted.
Hey, Dr. Dana, this is John.
Oh, hi, another John. Hi, John.
Hey, great call today. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
So my question is, so my wife is an entrepreneur. She works from home, has a successful consulting business, and she works a lot of hours, which is great. I love that she loves what she does. But the problem that I have is even though we do get to spend some time every day, like at dinner and things like that, I feel like when she has some free time, like on the weekends, has some time to go out and do stuff, she'd rather go out with her friends and go out to the bars with them instead of hanging out with me. So I'm wondering what I could do about that.
Okay, really good question. Well, there's two parts to that question, two answers, I guess, to that question, which is, I'll start out with the problem part of that. I don't know your wife. I don't know anything about your situation. I'm always a little bit concerned. There's always a small red flag for me when people say that someone wants to go out to a bar, they want to hang out with their friends, they want to party. Sometimes that is actually an excuse to drink, and there's a bigger problem there than maybe somebody or both of you are admitting. So the first thing I would want to do is check out whether that involves a lot of alcohol, that involves a lot of, partying it up, and that is always concerning to me. And sometimes people couch that in fold it up in, I want to be with my friends, but in actuality what it turns out to be is a need to alter their consciousness. That's the problem. So that's the first part of the question. If you find out that that's not what's going on, or you don't think that that's what's going on, the next part of my answer I'm not sure you're going to like, which is go out with her, which is some people just really want to have excitement, and they want to be social, and they want to have fun, and they want to go to new restaurants or go to new places or go dancing. The second part of that question would be, or that answer would be, what is it that she wants from you to have fun? What is it that she wants to have happen that she would want to hang out with you, that she would want to go do things? And try and come up with something that you both can do that she finds exciting and interesting and new. And, you know, I mean, I think you maybe if you've watched my system before, you've heard me say that monogamy is boring. And I mean, no disrespect to y'all. It just is by definition is. It's not new and exciting and fun. And so you kind of have to keep that new and exciting and fun in your marriage by going out and doing new and exciting things. So I don't know if she's going out because. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, I love what you're saying. Yeah, I totally agree.
Right. So, and again, back to our whole listening topic today, I bet that she's asked for that from you. I bet that she's, you know, she's said, well, why don't we go do this? Or why don't you go do that? It's possible. Again, I don't know you. It's possible that maybe you said, no, I don't want to do that. No, that doesn't sound very fun to me. And I would encourage you to have conversations with her and tell her, I love you. I want to have fun with you. I want this to work long term. So what can we do that you do think is fun and exciting and new? And then hopefully she'd be more likely to put her marriage as her number one priority above her friends, which she should be doing anyway. I would encourage her and I would really find out how you can be included in her fun. If, in fact, you find out it's not because she wants to go out and drink too much.
Right, okay.
Excellent. You're welcome. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks, John. So I'm going to take a webcast question right now. The webcast question, actually, before I do that, there's a bunch of other callers. If you guys want to raise your hand to ask a call, press *2 on your phone to raise your hand. So this question comes from Susan, and she says, my husband and I are struggling to keep our heads above water financially. He's working 7 days a week to try and get a business off the ground, and I work and take care of our son most of the time. We have hardly any support system to help either. There's really no time or money to fit in quality time alone into our lives right now, and my husband is way too stressed and overloaded to start trying to work on our marriage, although we both know that it's not as good as it is, and the stress of our lives is only making things worse. Do you have any relationship advice for couples who are really struggling with just keeping a roof over our heads?
Yes, absolutely. And, this topic in today's times comes up a lot. I'm just like the rest of everybody. I would love to go out. You know, my ideal date is to go out and spend some money and go out on the town and go to a nice restaurant and all of that. But I also know that that's not necessary. You know, I know that simply turning off the TV on a Thursday night and spending an hour rubbing each other's feet and having a conversation is honestly sometimes even better, sometimes even more bonding. And I know I happen to live in San Diego, so I can't, you know, give you guys too much advice for those of you in other states that are not beach bound, but a walk on the beach, a walk in the park, going for a hike, there's thousands of activities that are bonding and not expensive, and fun and, you know, and all of those things. Going to your local swimming pool at 8 o'clock at night and, you know, swimming around is fun. I mean, it's just so much that you can do.
And we also have an exercises in the workbook. We've got like 70 different ideas for things to do that are free.
Oh yeah, in our workbook
we do under the spending time
that you got when you bought the system. There's all kinds of ideas, and then there's even another section on really inexpensive things.
Right.
So basically, what I'm going to tell you is, and again, I apologize for being straightforward. No money is not an excuse. And the time issue is a priority issue, honestly. I realize that it's tough to make money. I realize we have to keep a roof above our head. But again, there's always an hour at 9 o'clock at night. There's the neighbors that you can switch off babysitting with, every other weekend. So you guys can, just go for a hike for 3 hours on a Saturday morning. There are systems that you can set in place that are inexpensive or free. But it has to do with prioritizing. It has to do with putting that first. And then secondly, and I don't mean to threaten your husband, but you need to let him know that marriages take work. They take attention and they take time. And I can't tell you how many marriages I've had to put back together because they were working, they had kids, then somebody got sick, and then the kid was in the bed, and then they were working two jobs. And then, now 8 years later, and one of them's not in love. Not even close to in love. Maybe both of them aren't in love. And now we have to bridge this huge chasm between the two of them and get them back together again. And that's what will happen if you don't spend time together. I can guarantee it. Most people think, I'll get to my marriage next month. I'll get to my marriage next year. Our marriage will be a priority as soon as the baby goes to school, as soon as this thing slows down at work. Then I'm going to make my... And that's when marriages honestly are vulnerable to an affair because somebody comes along and does want to pay attention and spend time with that spouse. And that's when marriages are just really in jeopardy to falling apart. So I would, again, I don't think you should threaten your husband to say that, but just say, he's very important to you. You're not going to let that happen to your marriage. You're not going to let that happen to your family. And that you kind of insist that we start spending some time together and being a couple and making that our number one priority because, again, to work so hard to save your financially and then get a divorce when you divide all your finances in half isn't going to help anybody. So I get the working hard. I get that that's important. But really, really, you can find the time. You can find the energy if you make it your number one priority. So I would encourage both of you to do that.
It can alleviate some of the stress that they're under, too.
Oh, yeah, that time together is so relaxing and so wonderful. And, again, it just when your relationship feels safe and you feel like you're being heard and you feel like you've got time to make love and you've got time. I mean, honestly, everything is much simpler. It makes your day go better. So, yeah, it does make a huge difference. Thank you.
Awesome. We're going to take the next caller. The caller ending in 1622, you are now unmuted. Please state your name for questions. Are you there?
Hello, is that me? Hello?
Yeah, thank you. Yes, I can hear you.
Yeah, hi, my name's Becky.
Hi, Becky.
And, hi, I'm relatively new, and to your program. And my spouse has actually already left. And, I've kind of looked over a little bit of the material, and I'm just wondering if, if this is going to help.
He's
already out the door.
Is he still talking to you? Is he still making noises about reconciling, or has he filed papers and is he dating somebody? What does that mean, already left?
Well, he's moved out. He hasn't filed papers yet. We're talking, but it's just about what do we do with all this stuff and who gets what.
Okay. Do you know why he left?
Well, just a general unhappiness. We don't talk much, at all. The communication is really broken down. I don't think he's seeing anybody else. To me, he seems really moody. And nothing. Even to the point of being somewhat verbally abusive, so it's hard to feel close to him when he is around,
Right. It sounds like you're saying he might be a little bit depressed. Depression is sort of the secret disorder among men in a lot of ways, and it manifests itself in irritability, fatigue, and kind of anger and just sort of general moodiness. Women kind of get really sad and go to bed, but men manifest it in all kinds of different ways. And it can be caused, again, by just some hormone stuff. It can be caused by stressors in your life. It can also be caused, interestingly enough, by sleep apnea. I don't know if you ever looked into that. That's one of the number one causes for depression in men. It does sound like that's what's going on for him. We keep kind of, it's funny that our topic is appropriate today. We go back to kind of listening and hearing. I would maybe just start to ask him some questions and find out how he's feeling, find out what he needs, find out, again, ask that very vital question, what would have to change in the relationship for you to stay, but to want to work on it? What would have to happen in our current situation with him living someplace else for him to turn around and try and do some work on the relationship? I would want to know that from him. And so in answer to your question, the system currently, while it helps everybody, it would help you. But in general, I would more argue the checked out partner system is kind of more where you guys are at right now. That's another product that we offer. And that has to do with, getting him checked back in, telling him the grass isn't always greener, showing him that it can get better, that it can change, all that information that he needs. I think is probably what he needs to hear. More than the system right now. The system really very much helps once that partner has turned back around. And they don't have to be moved back in, but at least they're facing, by turned around I mean kind of figuratively, they've turned around and are facing that other person versus facing away from them. So in answer to your question, I think that the checked out partner system is kind of really what he needs. And then, a lot of times talking to somebody, I know this sounds strange, guys, but talking to somebody like you're not their partner, like almost as if saying, okay, whether we stay married or not, I'm not talking about that right now. I'm not talking about our marriage. I'm talking about you because I love you, and I'm concerned about you and your moods and your future and your health, and it's got nothing to do with us. I'm not trying to say it has to do with the marriage. It's like almost talking to them like a friend to try and address what possibly might be going on with him, rather than, because sometimes people are resistant to talk about that stuff because they don't want to encourage you or give you false hope about the marriage. So if you just take the marriage off the table, he might listen to you about your suspicions about his mood and something else. And then my last ditch effort, and I'm all about getting people involved, would be to talk to his family or to talk to your friends or to talk to the people that matter. And if they've noticed any difference or change in his mood, if they've noticed he's become more withdrawn and less happy and all that, sometimes they can get involved. And again, when it comes to marriage, I don't necessarily believe in airing out all your dirty laundry to your friends and family. But when the marriage is about to end, to just kind of let them know, you know, hey, if you can help offer some support, because sometimes he'll hear it from somebody else. So if you think that might be going on, maybe getting, you know, like his brother or his best friend or anybody to kind of say, you know, hey, dude, like, you're not right. Like, something's going on with you and you're about to make a huge decision. You might want to fix that first. Can really get a man to listen more than he will listen, unfortunately, to his own spouse. So that would be my advice there.
Well, I really appreciate that because, you know, I get all emotional about the dissolution of the marriage and, you know, get angry about that or sad about that or whatever. And so, you know, maybe it would help to just try to let go of that, which is difficult. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe that's what you can help me with. I don't know. So that I can actually
be concerned about
him as a person.
Exactly. And people hear that when they sense the sincerity in your, you know, even saying, look, whether we work out or not, I love you, you know, and I want you to be happy, and I don't think you are. And, you know, regardless of how that affects our marriage, you probably want to look into that. Because also, depression for men can lead to all kinds of other health concerns and heart disease and stress levels and strokes, and it's just not a good thing. And it's really, really hard for men to address and be honest about. So I would maybe help him with that if you think that's what's going on with him.
Yeah. Well, thank you
very much.
I appreciate that very much.
Sure. Good luck
with that. Thank you. We've got another webcast question, and I just want to remind everyone who's on the call, press star 2 if you'd like to ask your question. There's lots of you that haven't raised your hand yet.
Yeah, but we're doing good today. Lots of people are calling in.
Yeah, it's awesome. So the next question is a webcast question, and this one comes from Valerie, and it's on topic. It says, my husband doesn't communicate at all. He's never been a communicator. What do I need to do to get him to talk to me and think about what he says?
Okay, well, that's actually true. A lot of people, not only men, but a lot of people weren't taught to communicate in their families. It wasn't modeled for them. They were taught, in fact, a lot of people were even taught the opposite, which is we don't talk about our feelings. We don't talk about bad things. We don't talk about, you know, we just keep our mouth shut. We're very stoic kind of family. So it's very likely that he does not know how to communicate. I don't find that hard to believe. Unfortunately, what we tend to do is we tend to take that very personally, and we tend to blame them, and we tend to shame them about that. I've actually had a woman in my office just the other day who said that her husband was, and I quote, an emotional box of rocks. And she expects him to talk to her. And I said, well, that's not helping. A, it's name-calling, and B, that's certainly not going to get him to open up to you. So here's how I would get him to learn how to communicate. I would do exactly the exercise that I said. I would ask questions. I would not shut him down. I would not tell him he shouldn't feel that way. I would not object to what he's saying. I would simply just, you know, ask, how does that make you feel? You know, what do you think that reminds you of? Did your father ever do something like that? I mean, just really ask questions. What women tend to do, and again, I don't have you on the line, so I can't ask you this, but honestly, what women tend to do is that we say our men don't communicate with us. So the man will say, well, I'm really unhappy with the housekeeping around here, right? He's done how he feels about something. And she says, I can't believe you would do that. I can't believe you would say something like that. Here's why, and how could you get? And then, you know, I sort of sigh and think, well, you just shut him up. A lot of times, I don't have you here, so I'm just going with generalizations. A lot of times men have learned in a relationship to not talk because it gets them nowhere. They have learned to not talk because it gets them in trouble. They have learned to not talk because when they have these conversations, they don't get any sex. There's so many reasons why they've just learned to shut up. So A, he might have come to the relationship with that, and B, there might be something going on in the relationship that is really shutting him down. So I would do the exercise. Rather than telling him he's failing and he's not talking and he's a bad communicator and he's an emotional box of rocks, I would tell him, I would just tell him instead, I'm interested in what you have to say. I want to hear what you think about this. And then don't talk. Don't answer back. Don't participate. Don't tell him he's wrong. Don't tell him, you know, all that other stuff. Just ask questions. And once that's safer for him, and it may have been never safe in his life, but if he feels safe communicating what he thinks with you, what he feels with you, without, you know, again, being chained and so on and so forth, he's much more likely to open up. There's also a great book that we even quote in our book by Dr. Patricia Love called How to Fix Your Marriage Without Talking About It, I think. Yeah, How to Fix Your Marriage Without Talking About It. Patricia Love, her last name. Isn't that funny? She's a marriage therapist. And it kind of talks about this, which is kind of the number one thing that women avoid at all time is feeling disconnected and abandoned. And the number one thing that men avoid is feeling shamed and told they're failures. So if in communicating he's told he's a failure at that, he's not going to start communicating. He's going to just shut up even more. So check out that book as well. And then also look at our book or the workbook. Or even the videos that you've already bought, I hope, on communication. And it really kind of teaches you how to listen and draw somebody out in a conversation. And, again, it has to do with feeling safe. Not that he doesn't have feelings, it's that he doesn't know how to say them and he doesn't feel safe saying them. Your job, I guess, and if you want to be close to your husband, is to kind of help him learn how to do that. And that's probably going to mean that you have to change your communication style somewhat. So,
awesome.
My advice.
Thanks. For those of you guys on the call, I just want to remind you to press star 2 if you want to raise your hand. I've got lots more webinar questions, so I'm going to get the next one up here. So this one reads, my wife and I have been in therapy like 3 or 4 times. Every time it's because she says she's unhappy with my lack of communication. She says it's why we don't have emotional intimacy before we get in therapy, and within 2 or 3 sessions she says everything's fine and she doesn't want to go anymore. Now she's asking me to go again. I want to work on my marriage, but does 1 or 2 sessions really make a difference?
Okay, I have met this couple 1,000 times. There's 1 of 2 things going on. I'll give you the most benign one first. One of the things that goes on, and we actually kind of talk about it at the very beginning of the system, is sometimes we get into therapy, and 1 or 2 sessions can make a difference. I like to think that I can make a difference in 1 or 2 sessions. I like to think that 1 or 2 of our videos can make a huge difference. So one of the things we caution people about is, you know, if their marriage is in a red zone, as it were, 1 or 2 sessions, 1 or 2 videos, you know, 1 really good self-help book can kind of bring it just over the red zone, just into the black, as it were. And then, you know, the real work begins. You know, we talk about monogamy takes time, it takes effort, it takes work, it takes attention, it takes learning new skills. You know, it takes – so people, they get it to good enough. And good enough is good enough for a while. Then they kind of want to go back and focus on their kids and focus on their jobs and focus on their there's helicopters going over, guys, so I'll probably excuse the vibrations. So sometimes that's what's happening. And so they get into therapy and it gets good enough. It gets out of the red zone, as it were. And that's enough for them. And it's not. So unfortunately, it's dangerous because it keeps it too close to the red zone. And it keeps your marriage at... you know, at what, a C plus maybe, you know, a B minus if I'm being generous, you know. And nobody wants that marriage. It's just, I don't know, for me, I plan on only being married 1 time, and I don't want a fine marriage. I don't want an okay marriage. I want a great marriage. So I would encourage that person to really work on great. And again, I wouldn't use it as a criticism. The other thing, too, is that I would sort of insist, like, I want to go into therapy and I want to stay in therapy for 3 months or 6 months or, you know, whatever. I want to do the work because I love you, because I want our marriage to be strong, because I want to be close to you. You know, that could be all things that you're telling your wife. Okay, now let me tell you the not-so-benign explanation is the other half of these couples that I see all the time. Here's the deal. A lot of times someone will bring their partner to therapy because they want me to fix them. Them. Well, of course, what happens is, I quickly point out that a marriage is 2 people. And that if there's if there's dysfunctional patterns going on, both people are participating, and the partner who brought that person to therapy often doesn't want to hear that. They want me to fix the other person. They want to come in here and say, here's how he's broken, and he can't communicate, and he can't do this, and he can't do that. Now fix him. And what I will quickly point out is, well, you know, one of the reasons he's not communicating, honey, is because you've shut him up. And one of the things is he doesn't communicate is because when he's talking in here right now, you're glaring at him like you hate him. And, you know, and a lot of times that other person doesn't want to hear that. A lot of times, that other person, and so they sort of quickly feel uncomfortable that they're being called to the carpet. They quickly feel vulnerable, and all of a sudden, good enough is good enough, and they leave therapy. That happens a lot in couples therapy specifically, because you know, and also when people bring me their teenagers, they want me to fix their teenagers, and then I point out quickly that it's their parenting. They don't like that either. But my point is some that might be going on. And it's possible sometimes even maybe even ahead of time to let the therapist know that would be great, so that they could handle that situation differently. To for instance, if somebody came to me and said, "You're our fourth therapist, we saw every other one two or three times," and I would know, aha, okay, well, one of you doesn't want to be here, or one of you doesn't want to hear something, or, you know, or you guys are good enough. So I'd be able to cut that asset off at the pass, as it were, and try and get that person committed to a bit more work. So, again, I would argue that probably one or two of those things is going on, and or both, frankly. And it needs to be said out loud in a loving, you know, again, in the manner of, I love you and I want this to work. I, you know, you matter to me. I want to be close to you, and I don't want to have you upset about my communication. I want to learn to give you what you need. I mean, all those light sentences, not like, you know, you take me to therapy and then pop out. Don't say that. But say the, you know, say the nice stuff that is really what you mean, and let her know that you are committed to working on the marriage. And then, all of that being said, it's in part why we invented the system. Just so you guys know, I mean, I don't want to be a sales call, but you probably already bought it if you're on this call, so that's cool. A lot of what, you know, 80% of what I teach in therapy, I teach in that system. So, sometimes people can hear it better coming from a video in the privacy of their own home. They don't feel as threatened. They don't feel as put on the spot. And the system takes such a short amount of time that they're able to go through the whole system, so they don't just work on the communication. They work on the communication and their money and their sex life. And so also I would encourage you guys to kind of go back to their system if you already have it, and really check that out and really go through the program. Because it is, you know, we offered it as an alternative to therapy because some people just can't and won't do therapy. And also sometimes it, you know, it works a lot better than a lot of therapists out there. So I would really maybe kind of get your wife on board and tell her you want to start with the communication section so you can work on that, but then, you know, work on the whole system altogether. So there you go.
Awesome. Thank you. So we have another caller who's raised the hand. This one doesn't have caller ID, so I can't quite I think if you have your call blocked, I'm trying to unmute you, and oh man, it doesn't want me to unmute an a blocked call. Ah.
Oh wait, I heard somebody.
Wait, let me try it again.
Can you hear me?
Hello? Yes, I can
hello.
Hear you. Oh my goodness.
Hello.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Oh, excellent.
Okay. Hi.
Yes, I can. Thanks. My name is Michael.
Michael?
And, I just wanted to say thanks so much for taking my lead. I have appreciated all I've gotten from the program. It's been very beneficial to me. The issue that I'm having, however, is that my partner has no interest in actually watching the videos. I have the Strong Marriage Now system, and I found, like I said, a lot of really useful information. But every time I try to bring it up to her, she's just completely disinterested, thinks it's a waste of time, doesn't want anything to do with it. So I was wondering if you had any advice or any tips or ways I could get my partner to possibly watch the videos with me.
Yes, I absolutely do. But it's an interesting roundabout way to get to do it, which is I would encourage you to watch all the videos, it sounds like you already have, and then to utilize what you have learned. And in utilizing what you have learned, bring up the videos. So in other words, we're talking about communication today. So next time you go out to dinner and you're just listening to her and really, you know, hearing what she has to say and asking questions and not getting to, you know, all that stuff, all the things we're talking about today, and then you kind of point out, like, how much better that was. You know, you really learned that in the system and you're really excited about it, and it's really making a difference in the way that you are communicating. And then I would have a conversation about money and talk about, you know, the fact that you really would love to get on the same page with her. You want to make sure that she feels balanced and equal in that relationship. you want to make sure that you're doing your fair share of the division of labor, all of the things that I talk about in the videos, and you know, there's so many of them. If you, you know, we talk about the fact that, if you know, it's like a dance, right? So if you change the moves in the dance, the whole dance changes. So you watching the system and you applying all the techniques will, A, dramatically change your relationship, and, B, she'll notice. And sometimes people have to notice the changes first. They have to, before they don't think it's all, you know, just a bunch of hoo-ha, they have to go, oh, okay, look at that. He is, wow, he really does communicate differently. And I do feel better about our sex life. And there's something there. He knows something. And then they go, and I want to know that too. When they get their interest is piqued, once you, I guess, walk the walk, then there's something there that they think, wow, I want a piece of that. I want to know what does he know that I don't know, and why is he communicating better, and why is this better, and they'll do the difference. So my answer is, you do it first, and then talk about where you learned it. And I think that makes a huge difference. And we have found, and people have told us afterward, that that's the number one way to get their partners to participate when they're unwilling.
Awesome.
I see.
Cool. Thank you so much for dialing in.
Thanks, Mike.
So I got another.
Yes, thank you.
Awesome. And for anybody else who wants to raise their hand, please press star 2. And got another question now from the webinar. And this one is, I was in love, but she was in love with someone else when we married. Is it hopeless?
Oh, good heavens, no. No. You know, one of the most misunderstandings about marriage is that the marriage has to be in the same emotional state that it was in the beginning, and that how it was in the beginning makes a big difference to, you know, how it is today or how it is in the future, or, you know, all this other stuff. And that's just not true. I mean, marriages last an incredibly long time. And so whether that person was in love in the first place, whether that person was in love with somebody else, whether that person, it doesn't matter. What matters is today. What matters is, what does that person need to feel loved today? What does that person need to feel connected today? What does that person want out of a marriage, want out of a partner? What would make them fall in love? And so, no, the answer, regardless of how that person felt about you on the day you got married, that doesn't matter. Now, if that person is still in love with that person, then we've got a whole other problem. Also not a deal breaker, by the way, because we can, within the marriage, fall out of love with somebody else and fall in love with the person that we're married to. But it's a common misunderstanding that, you know, how you walk down the aisle somehow determines the rest of your life. And that's just not true, because if that was true, then everybody would stay married their whole life, right? Because most people are madly in love when they walk down the aisle. So they would just, you know, work out for the next 50 years. But that's not true. Our feelings change, and they ebb and they flow, and we change, and we grow into different people, and we, you know, so, no. But the other thing, too, is that we have to make sure that the person, you know, if his wife was in love with somebody else, that she's not holding that person as an ideal, as a fantasy, as an unattainable dream of what marriage could have been like, because, you know, the bottom line is she would have been picking up his socks in 3 years, too, and they would have had the same problems. And so sometimes they put this person on a pedestal and over-fantasize about what that life would have been like, and it's hard to compete with the fantasy. It's hard to compete with somebody who's not there. So, yeah, I would want to be talking about that. I would want to be talking about what that means and if she thinks that means something about their relationship. So, okay, so the answer, no. It doesn't mean that it's hopeless. It just means that you guys have to work on your marriage, and you have to figure out what is it that she wants out of a marriage and what is it that she wants out of a man. And try and work on that, and try and be that. And again, if she's committed, you guys have a really good shot of having the marriage you want.
All right. One thing I wanted to add, because I love that story that we talked about, that actually arranged marriages have a higher success rate.
Yes.
And the fact that they actually, because their expectation is that they will grow in love over time.
Mm-hmm.
Not that, you know, our Western, you know, things, messages that we always get, they always fall in love. And you kind of fall out of love, and then you think it's done. Actually, the whole notion of growing in time is something
that's critical, and I love that you brought that up. And by the way, what she means is, I don't know if you guys know the statistic on arranged marriages, but not only do they stay together, but they report being happy and in love far longer than Western marriages. They have a higher statistical rate. And because of what Amy said, which is, they understand that we grow in love. And that, you know, again, who we loved at the beginning and whether we were madly in love while we walked down the aisle is really not the relevant point. They work toward growing in love and making a life together. And they have a huge, again, success and satisfaction rate with those marriages. So that's a really good point.
Awesome. We've got another webinar question. This one comes from Tiffany. She says, I'm an Army wife with my husband currently deployed to Afghanistan who will not be back until the end of the year. My husband and I are from different backgrounds, socioeconomic and educational. So when we attempt to discuss issues that are complex, such as finances, family, or emotional fulfillment, we have extreme difficulty connecting. What or how do you recommend we can overcome this communication barrier?
Wow. Well, you know, people have different communication styles. And I think, unfortunately, what happens is couples spend a lot of time trying to get the other person to communicate their way and communicate in a way, you know, that they understand. And rather than learning their partner's form of communication, rather than trying to understand, okay, so when you say this, it means this. When you, you know, times that you want to talk or hear, words that I say that you have a hard time with or this, you know. So I would argue that they need to spend a little bit of time learning each other's style and learning how to communicate about that stuff. Now, when one party's away, that's very difficult to do. Since 80% of communication is body language, it's hard to do on phone, virtually impossible to do on email. But, you know, you can sort of begin conversations about that.
Mm-hmm.
And begin conversations and maybe even educate yourself about your partner's different cultures. Different cultures tend to have, these are generalizations, but styles of communication.
Can Skype help at all? I think
Skype would help a lot. Yeah, Skype would help a lot. That's a great idea. And I would, rather than focusing on your differences, trying to figure out how does your partner communicate, what do they need to hear, what makes it easier for them to talk, you know, all of those sort of things. I have a couple in therapy now that she comes from a family that is just sort of, they communicate very loud and they use hand gestures and they get very passionate about what they're talking about. And he always says, you're yelling at me. And she's not yelling at him. I've been in the room. She's not yelling at him, but she's excited and she's passionate and she's vehement. And so, you know, they have to meet in the middle about that. He has to understand that and not take that personally and understand what that means and what she's trying to say. And she kind of needs to bring it down a notch and recognize that when she gets like that, he's not going to hear her very often. He's going to shut down because he feels like she's yelling. So, you know, again, talking about those things, not taking them personally, recognizing they're a style versus a personal attack, all of those things they can really get together and figure out, and then their communication will get a lot better. And like I said, a lot of that needs to be done in person, so or on Skype could work as well.
Yeah. Awesome. So, guys, we're running out of time. I'm going to have one more webinar question. If anybody wants to raise their hand, we will take one more caller if you want to raise your hand. And I'm going to go to the last webinar question, which is, after 10 years of marriage, my husband and I are separating due to his drinking. I think he's a great dad, but he drinks so much at night he sometimes can't function and has actually passed out a couple times. He wants 50-50 custody, but I don't trust him with the kids. He says he still wants to work on the marriage, but this is still a big fight between us. Should I just give up and let him have the kids, or should I fight it and risk losing him?
Oh, gosh, what a bind that you're in. I'm so sorry. Well, I'm afraid I'm going to have to go with kids. I'm afraid I'm going to have to go with protecting the kids. I, of course, want the marriage to work if it can, and I think that the kids would want the marriage to work if it can, but if he is not being honest about his drinking problem and he's not seeking help and he's not getting into a program and so on and so forth, I don't even want to tell you guys what I know has happened with people falling asleep on their children and the catastrophes and the deaths that can go on when there's only one person in the house and they're unconscious. So I'm so sorry. But at the same time, you guys have probably heard this expression. It's not a figure of speech, it's reality, which is a lot of times people have to hit bottom before they will stop drinking, and possibly losing his wife and kids might be the thing that actually makes him realize, oh, my God, I have a drinking problem. And then I need to tell you, you're going to need to get the law. Oh, God, I hate this as well. You're going to have to get lawyers involved, which I can't stand doing. I recommend when anybody breaks up that they go into mediation. But in this particular case, you're probably going to have to get an attorney because there's all sorts of really nifty things they can do now. You make an appeal with a judge. There's these like lick strips, basically, that can prove the person hasn't been drinking within so many hours or so many days, I think, or maybe even weeks. If he's ever gone into treatment or if he ever had a DUI or anything like that, then you've got a better case. Unfortunately, I got to give you the bad news. If there is no evidence that he overdrinks, currently you don't have a lot of room one way or the other, especially if your kids are little and can't say that, but that daddy was asleep on the couch. And so it gets real nasty. And I'm so sorry, but in the end, yeah, I'm always going to go with you got to protect the kids. And of course you want to keep your marriage, and of course you want to try and make it work with him. But you can't do it at their expense. If anything were to happen to them, you would, it would be so difficult for you to live with. So, I'm sorry for your situation. And you know, again, I really hope that this will be his wake up call, right? That maybe this will be, and again, you can always couch it with, I love you enough, to do this. I love you enough for you to get help. I love you enough. You know, don't even tell him you're shutting the door on the marriage, but you're not going to let him, or you're going to try to not let him, see the kids because, or have them overnight because you can't trust him. So I'm so sorry that you have to go through that, but I would definitely go with protecting the kids first. Okay.
Okay. We actually have another caller that's raised their hand, and it's the caller ending in 8155. If you could state your name and question.
Yeah. Hi, Dr. Dana. Thank you for taking my call. My name is Sam.
Hey, Sam.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for taking my call again. I just want to get right to the point. My wife, she had like emotional affairs. We've been married 18 years, off and on kind of thing, on internet or with some physical people. Last over a year, that's when she had another affair, and then she just decided to leave the house about a year and 2 months ago. Since then, I've been trying to work with her and trying to communicate, and she doesn't want to do anything about our marriage. We do have three kids.
Wow, I'm so sorry.
She had filed also for divorce, and I got one more month for final. And I'm still trying to work things out. I'm trying to get her to listen to some of the sessions, the programs that you have, but she's just refusing. The only thing that she's communicating with me is just for the sake of the kids. And her parents are they're against her, and just everybody's against what she's doing. I believe it's really wrong, and I don't believe in divorce, really. Where do I go from here?
Yeah, well, you're doing everything right, Sam. I mean, you're trying to get her to listen. I'm assuming you're trying to get her to listen to Checked Out Partner, which is really the program she needs to listen to, and I think that's the best call. You've gotten her family involved in letting her know that you don't think that you shouldn't get, a divorce. Don't get your kids involved. Don't tell them what's going on. Don't speak badly about their mother. Don't tell them anything about what's going on. Good. That's good, because it hurts for them. I mean, and then the other thing, too, recognizing that, we all want to end the pain and we want to move on. I've had lots of people get remarried after they've got divorced. So it's not necessarily the end. I wouldn't recommend that you keep doing this for, 3 or 4 years, pursuing somebody that's not there. But, letting her know that in your heart you're not divorced, that you love her, that you're still open to working on the marriage. That being said, Sam, people who have serial affairs have bigger issues. And it's not just the marriage, and it's not just what's going on with you guys. They have other big kind of psychological and personality issues that she would need to get treatment for, or she's just going to do it again. So I recognize and I respect with your three kids that you're trying to work on the marriage, but also just having her back is not necessarily going to work on the marriage. She would actually have to figure out why she keeps having affairs, what she's not getting from the relationship, what's going on with her and her life and her pain that she uses affairs to fill up the hole and all of that stuff. So, again, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, she mentioned some things that she's saying that you're not being too romantic and things like that. And, when she left, I really was digging and trying to seek for solutions. I do have some faults here and there, but I never, I was always been faithful to her. Nobody else was involved in my life, but only her.
I don't mean to rub salt in the wound, but it's possible that she has been asking for things from the marriage that you have simply been saying, well, I don't cheat, so it's good enough. So at the best, I would try and walk the walk, like be the man that she has been asking for all along. Stop talking about it. Stop telling her what you will change. Stop telling her about what will be different and make it different in your life and see if she notices. you know, really that's pretty much your only shot at this point is to try and be the man that she's asked for and see if that will make a difference. But in the end, you know, one affair I would say doesn't have a lot to do with you, but that many affairs, it has a lot to do with her. And that she's going to have to fix. There's nothing you can do about that. So good luck with that, Pam.
Yeah. Now, one more thing. Should I talk to her parents about her affairs? Because they're very strict on that, and they might abandon her. I don't know what.
Well, that's a tough question. Normally, I would say no. I would say if you're a month away from, she's only going to get mad at you about that. That's not going to help your marriage.
Right.
So I don't think that would make a big difference. I think that she's just going to put another nail in that coffin, as it were. So while I do think that they could probably say something and make her feel guilty, in the end, she's going to feel betrayed by you. So I would say no. I would say no on that call as far as calling her parents. But I understand the inclination in wanting to.
I kind of feel like responsible on that behalf because they asked me if she had done something, and because she always says, he doesn't trust me. It's because of her lies and her affairs throughout our marriage life. But
yeah,
I tried to show trust.
In the end, I would simply say, she's given me many reasons over the years to not trust her, and that's between her and I, and if you want to ask her, you can ask her about it. Like, and I wouldn't get involved in that.
Okay.
Okay.
One last thing I just wanted to recommend, Sam. We've done a membership call, I think, maybe 4 or 5 months ago that was How to Fix It on Your Own, which has some other advice that Dr. Dana has given to people in your similar situation. If you want to listen in on that, you can access it on the monthly calls on the membership site.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Good luck, Sam.
All right.
Thanks, Sam. Thank you.
All right, so we are out of time. I'm just going to wrap it up here. Thank you so much, everybody, for dialing in and asking your questions. We hope you found this very valuable. And as I mentioned, we have the membership site with the recordings of the old calls, and we've also got the private internet forum to be able to ask questions of us and each other. And we'll send you an email when the replay of the call is available on the membership site. I also want to let you know that we did send the June magazine and the CD from last month to your home, and so we'd love to hear what you think about that. Next month's call will be on Tuesday, July 17th at this same time, 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern, and the topic for next month is the cause of 70% of divorces, which are money issues. So I know we have some callers struggling with money issues. We're going to get into that topic in more detail next month, so mark your calendar to discover how disagreements over money and division of labor in the home can destroy your marriage and what to do about it. And I know many of you have asked to talk to Dr. Dana at more length, and I know, some of you couldn't spend as much time on the phone with her as possible. So she has opened up some time in her calendar for some exclusive one-on-one Skype or phone counseling sessions. If you'd like to know more about how to talk to Dr. Dana for a one-on-one session, you can apply for that session at strongmarriagenow.com/dr-dana-session, or you can just email us and we'll send you the information. And that URL again is strongmarriagenow.com/dr-dana-session. Also, I want to thank all of you who responded to the survey last month. It's so great that consistently everybody's really finding it valuable and saying that they could recommend it to their friends. I do want to just give you guys a request for those of you that are still on. If you feel like it would be helpful, please invite your friends and loved ones to join our email list because we have a goal of revitalizing and saving 1 million marriages, so we really would appreciate you spreading the word and having people sign up for our email list. We will be sending out another survey today, so please take a few moments and let us know what you liked and what we can do better, and also topics that you'd like us to cover for future months. And that's about it. Dana, you want to?
Oh, no, just thank you guys. These are great questions today, and thank you everybody who called in and wrote in with that and really letting me be a part of your world for just a moment. I appreciate that, and I wish you a great month. That's all. Hope to talk to you next month.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys.
Thanks. Bye-bye.